Welcome to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser. It's Thursday, October 10th. We have a great show lined up for you today. We're going to talk to Regina Falacci about the new DAR chapter in Juno. We'll talk to William Todd Hunt about this weekend's Juno Symphony concerts. Ryan Conneroe will be here to talk to us about his performance art piece installation at the Jack. And Nancy DeCherney will be here, as she does every Thursday, with all the arts news with Arts Up, Writer's Almanac, and a special audio postcard from last night's Mudrooms, produced by Scott Burton. You hear all that and more on Juno Afternoon. But first, we'll hear National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Dustin Brown and the Cherokee Nation tell the media they're ending ongoing litigation in Oklahoma in adoptive couple versus baby girl, known as the Baby Veronica case. Brown and the Cherokee Nation Assistant Attorney General held a press conference this morning in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Brown has been in a lengthy legal battle with South Carolina couple Matt and Melanie Capobianco over custody of Brown's daughter, Veronica. Brown is a member of the Cherokee Nation. Last month, he turned the four-year-old girl over to the couple after the Oklahoma Supreme Court lifted an order keeping her in the state. Brown argued the Federal Indian Child Welfare Act meant he should have custody, but this summer, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the law did not apply in his case. National Native News is following the story. Join us tomorrow for an update. Plans for two terminals to store and pump oil in tankers in Washington state are on hold. The State Shorelines Hearings Board reversed to permits that were already granted to the Hoquiam area. The board decided the projects need more environmental review. The Quinault Indian Nation and several conservation groups challenged the permits. Kristen Boyles is an attorney for Earth Justice that represents the group.
Nine are proposed right now in Washington state. And I think this board decision helps us take a deep breath and decide as a state whether this is what we want for our future, to become industrial oil shipping zones. This is using Washington state just as a drain pipe for the oil fields.
Oil would come from North Dakota or Canadian tar sands for the planned project. The companies developing the terminals say the state would benefit from jobs and tax revenue. A Lake Superior town on Madeline Island may become one of the first off-reservation locations in Wisconsin to have Ojibwe and English bilingual signs. Mike Simonson reports.
LaPointe Town Board Member Nick Nelson says he'll propose up to $5,000 for the bilingual signs in next year's town budget.
When you have signs for like library and stuff like that, if there's an equivalent or such, then we can put that up. Those are some of the things that as just the town we can do, so it's easy to just give that the green light right away.
Lac des Flambeaux tribal member Melvin Buchholz is also pushing for bilingual signs on Madeline Island.
I know a lot of the tourists kind of eat that stuff up when they see, you know, anything to do with the Ojibwe culture or even Native American culture in general.
Madeline Island's considered the mecca for Ojibwe tribes who traveled centuries ago from the East Coast to avoid extermination and find the food that grows on the water, which was wild rice. Buchholz says Madeline Island has gotten away from its native roots.
Not a whole lot of people associated it, you know, with being the starting point for the tribes. And, you know, it'd be nice to get some of that back. Not only a reminder of history, but to revive something that's slowly dying off.
Buchholz would like to form a partnership with the Bad River Band, which has reservation land on Madeline Island. Either way, Nick Nelson says bilingual signs make sense.
Ojibwe people, they have a huge depth of understanding of the importance of this area. Beginning to understand their language is just the beginning of a doorway into understanding why this area is so important.
Nelson hopes the bilingual signs will be in place next year. For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson.
The National Congress of American Indians has released a report on mascots. According to NCAI, the report includes history of Indian mascots and stereotypes of Native people. It also details the position of NCAI for ending racially based mascots. The report documents the legacy of the Washington football team name, which has been the focus of nationwide media attention. The report can be viewed online at ncai.org. In October 2003, Canadian Jordan Tutu became the first Inuk professional hockey player during his debut with the Nashville Predators. Tutu, now a forward with the Detroit Red Wings, was recently off the lineup after suffering a shoulder injury. In July, he visited Nunavut, where he addressed issues facing many communities in the Canadian territory, like suicide and alcoholism, issues that have impacted him personally. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser, and in the studio with me, I have Regina Falache, and she is the organizing chapter regent of the new Daughters of American Revolution chapter in Juno. Hi, Regina. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us here today.
Yeah, sure. And so for those people that don't know what the DAR, I can call it DAR mm-hmm. for sure, yes, for the Daughters of the American Revolution, what is the organization?
The DAR is a women's service organization that is non-political and non-profit, and we promote historic preservation, education, and patriotism.
Okay. And so as far as kind of what forms that takes, what kind of events does the DAR do?
The DAR does a lot of different projects. Some of our favorites include supporting our active military and our veterans, sometimes hosting them for a luncheon or perhaps seeing them off to see the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., welcoming them back to the community when they've come back from active duty overseas. We also like to participate in things like the 4th of July parade and show our patriotism by flying our flags at home and helping other people to fly their own U.S. flags. And in education, we offer scholarships of all sorts, ranging from nursing and law and chemistry and history, of course, and as well as literacy programs, reading to young children, helping adults as well as young people learn to read, and so forth. Hopefully our local chapter will be participating in the 4th of July parade next summer.
Oh, great. So this is a brand new chapter for Juno, but, you know, for those folks who don't know, because it's a really fascinating history, how did the Daughters of the American Revolution get started?
The DAR was formed in 1890 in Washington, D.C., and not too long after, many chapters sprung up across the nation as part of the overall organization. Alaska actually has a very rich DAR history. The very first chapter in Alaska formed in Sitka in 1902.
Oh, wow.
Currently, there are four chapters in Alaska. One is in Eagle River, another in Anchorage, a third in Kodiak, and a fourth in Fairbanks.
So this is the first time that Juno's ever, you know, had
actually
it together,
not
really. Okay.
Actually, Juno did have a chapter at one time called the Mount Juno chapter. We don't know if we will take on that name again or not, so you'll have to stay tuned for more details. But that chapter existed for many years, and it disbanded, unfortunately, in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know any of those people who did belong, but we do have a lot of interested ladies who want to start a new chapter, and we're very excited to preserve history and promote patriotism and education in Juno today.
Great. And so as far as events and things that you have planned for here in Juno, I imagine since you're a new club, you've got a lot going on.
Yeah.
So what are some of those events that people can attend or get involved in?
That'd be great. There are three upcoming events that I'd like to share with everyone. Our next one is Saturday, October 19th from 11 a.m. to 12:30. It's a meeting for anyone who's interested in finding out more about our organization and learning if they want to join us. on our journey. That meeting is going to be held at the Sepal Hollow Bed and Breakfast at 10901 Mendenhall Loop Road. Another event we have planned is Saturday, October 26th at 1 p.m. It's actually with the Gastineau Genealogical Society, where I will be presenting a program on the DAR library and the genealogical resources available to the public at that repository. The third event we have coming up soon is Saturday, November 2nd, from 10:30 to 11:30 in the morning. It's a lineage research workshop for those interested in joining DAR, and that will be held at the Mendenhall Valley branch of the public library.
Okay. And so for those folks who are like, well, why do we need to know genealogy and lineage to be a member of DAR? Can you explain that?
Absolutely. To join DAR, you have to be at least 18 years old and a woman, and you have to trace your family tree back to someone who helped in the American Revolution on the American side, of course. And that could be military or non-military. For example, I have an ancestor who donated beef to the American side, the troops, to so help them in their cause. And that is a qualifying service.
Really? And so the way that, you know, these events are actually to help people find out if they indeed did have people that helped in the American Revolution.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
And it's actually not that hard. I've been active in genealogy for many years and enjoy it very much, and I'm happy to help anyone with their family tree research to join DAR. And for someone in my age range, it's typically 8 generations back to the Revolutionary period.
Did you say 8 generations?
I did say 8 generations. And it's fascinating for me because everyone is part of the history, and everyone has contributed in some way, and it's our collective biographies that make up American history.
Definitely, definitely. And so as far as events, so, you know, as the chapter gets bigger here in Juneau, you said scholarships are available. What other kind of events do you, you know, a participation in the July 4th parade, but what other kind of events do you see happening?
Well, I hope that we can take on some projects of historic preservation. I remember reading in the paper a few weeks ago about different activities related to the historic structures here in Juneau that need help. And I hope that we can help educate the public on the need to preserve those structures. It's also help fundraising and get our hands dirty to work on the structures ourselves.
Yeah, that's great. So as far as people wanting to get more involved and find out more information, is there a website or a Facebook page or somewhere people can go to get more information?
There is. The general website for the entire organization is www.dar.org.
That's easy enough.
And our chapter does not have a website yet because we're not officially a chapter yet. But we do have a Facebook page, which is set up as an open group, and it's called DAR in the Inside Passage.
Great. Well, Regina, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you. And yes, if you want to join the DAR, search your lineage, there's definitely some opportunities. And those events are listed on the Facebook page as well.
Yes, they are. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Evolution, well, you know, we all want to change the world. But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out? Don't you know it's gonna be alright? Got a real solution, well, you know, we don't love to see the plan. You ask me for a contribution, well, you know, we all do what we can. But
But if you want money for people with minds that hate, all I can tell you is, brother, you have to wait.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. It's Thursday, October 10th, and we have a great treat for you today. Scott Burton went to Mudrooms last night and actually compiled an audio postcard from all the Mudrooms events last week. We're going to take a listen to that right now, and you can also hear the complete show Monday, October 28th at 7 p.m. So here's an audio postcard from produced by Scott Burton.
Good evening, and welcome to the Season 3 premiere of Mudrooms. I'm your co-host, Amanda Compton.
And I'm Alita Buff. Nice to see all of you this evening. We're going to have 7 stories for you tonight. Our theme is coming home.
Our first speaker tonight is Michael Cohan.
At this point, I realized I wasn't breathing. I looked up, and nobody else was breathing in the room either. The baby's face was blue, and we were voraciously rubbing the body.
My name's Clay Good, and I love the surprises from the stories. You never know what's going to come at you.
Please welcome Michelle Hale to the stage.
Then I noticed that the skiff was filling up with water very quickly because all our skiffs leaked, and they leaked a lot. And so when we ran the skiffs, we always ran with the plug out because that way the water that was coming into the skiff would go out the plug.
My name's Megan Belair, and I love that all the community comes together and that it's for a great cause and different charities, and half of the money is going towards Discover Southeast, and the other is Big Brothers Big Sisters, which I think is awesome.
Jim Hale. Jim was born and raised in the New Jersey bush.
Now, knowing Michelle as I do now, what happened next doesn't surprise me in the slightest. Mouse jumps out of the cabinet, onto the counter, onto the floor, and bam! Michelle stomps it with her bare foot and kills it.
My name is Lena Gilbertson, and I like that it's something so simple, yet every time you come, it's extremely entertaining, sometimes really moving, usually funny. It's always a good experience.
Our next speaker is Rich Forrest.
I got a little nervous right then, and then I looked over, and there he is, his eyeball was no farther than this away from me, and I looked him in the eye thinking, I'm cool, are you cool?
My name is Pamela Garcia, and what I like about Mudrooms is there are so many Juno people here, and it just feels like, wow, this is a true community. All these people coming out on a Wednesday night to hear each other's stories. What a community we have.
Our next speaker tonight is Jerry Smesser.
And we slept well on the roof. It was cool. It was silent. There was not much happening in Chakansur, Afghanistan at that late in the evening. And we slept well, and we woke up to a young man singing the call to prayer just as the dawn was breaking.
My name is Lindsay, and I love Mudrooms because I just like seeing a cross-section of Juno community come together.
Our next speaker is Laura Haywood.
I got to go to the Galapagos Islands. I got to ride the highest train in the world at the time. It went over 15,000 feet. It was so high that in first class, you actually got oxygen bottles. I was in third class, and they just told you to put your head between your knees, which worked also.
My name is Zach Hookwater, and what I like about Mudrooms is usually there's at least one scary story that for some reason I find funny.
So. Mr. Ryan Conroe is a Juno theater guy.
It was about midnight, and I had heard some stomping around upstairs earlier, but then all had been quiet for a little while. And then suddenly, there was this, like, and I was like, oh. And I sort of looked up, and then there was like this thump. And so I put my computer aside and was like, okay, here goes. This is it. And then there was another thump.
Thanks, everybody, for coming. We're going to be back here November 12th. The theme for the month is scars. And so they could be emotional scars. They could be physical scars. We hope to see you back. Thanks for coming. Have a good night.
And that was Mudrooms, an audio postcard done by Scott Burton. And that was really enjoyable. Mudrooms is such a cool event. And speaking of Mudrooms and cool events, in the studio with me right now is the one and only Ryan Conroe. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Shona.
So there were some thumps.
Yes.
You were the last speaker at the Mudrooms event last night.
Yes? I was. I had the pleasure of telling a story last night. It was really fun. It was a great gathering.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, that's a nice little segue there. And if you want to hear the full Mudrooms complete show, you can check that out Monday, October 28th at 7 p.m. And their next show is November 12th. So thanks to Scott Burton for that audio postcard. And, Ryan, you're not here to talk about Mudrooms, though, but you are here to talk about your really cool performance installation at the JAC, the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, called This Hour Forward.
That's right. Yes, this is a performance art installation that we opened last Friday, at First Friday, and it's running through this month. And it includes photography, video installation, sound, and then a live performance element, which I performed on First Friday, and then we'll perform occasionally throughout the month, including this evening from 5 to 7, and tomorrow evening as well, and then next weekend also.
Right. So This Hour Forward, I mean, I'm not sure. I kind of want to give some of it away. I don't want to give it all away, but what does the title mean to you?
That's a good question. The title, the piece is about examining marriage, the dynamics of marriage in American society, and questions of identity and commitment, and sort of, I guess, the models that we grow up with and how we do or do not fit into those as we go through our lives, focusing on marriage and relationships. A part of the inspiration, the personal inspiration for the show for me, was my brother's wedding this summer down in Georgia, where I'm originally from. And it was a big Catholic wedding. It was really cool.
I saw something like 10 bridesmaids, maybe.
Yes.
There were a lot of bridesmaids there.
Yeah, there were 11 bridesmaids and 10 groomsmen.
Wow.
I was one of the groomsmen. It was a very traditional big Catholic wedding, and really happy. I mean, I'm psyched about my sister-in-law and all of that. But in the process of getting ready for that, I just started thinking about, wow, what does this mean to me? I'm a gay man, and I can't necessarily sort of quote unquote succeed to fulfill that dream that is kind of like what was put forward to me as a kid, you know, as I grew up in the culture that I grew up in. And so that kind of inspired me to explore artistically some of those questions, I guess I should say. And so one of the things I did in the process, I was just sort of gathering material. The priest at my brother's wedding in July was awesome, and his homily or his sermon was really beautiful and thought-provoking. And kind of unrelated to this project, I asked him if he would send me a copy of what he said, and he emailed it to me. And there was a phrase in the speech that said something to the effect of, we pledge to celebrate Kyle, my brother, and Claire, his wife, and their union from this hour forward. And that phrase really popped out to me. And another thing I like about that phrase is the sort of the different kind of double entendres within it, including the question of the word hour, the sense of ownership or not, and the sense of time that I do hope people will come. You can come to the performance for 2 minutes if you want to. You can pop in, pop out. It's a gallery. But I liked the sort of gentle suggestion of an invitation to stay for an hour if you can.
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting thing, because when I saw the exhibit and I was like, This Hour Forward, for me, the kind of immediacy of gay marriage, and actually that really was kind of on the forefront of my mind, meaning like, This Hour Forward, where, you know, in some states it's okay, and in some places, you know, so that, interestingly enough, politically became a pretty big thing for me in that piece.
That's great. That's good to hear. I mean, that's an element that's definitely in there. And of course, as I was working on this, the Supreme Court made their decision about that Section 3 of the Defense of Marriage Act. So basically recognizing gay marriage in states that have legalized it. So in Alaska, it's still not recognized, because Alaska, the state, has to make that move. But if and when Alaska ever does, the federal government will recognize it then. But anyway, that element has been really present too in the project, and it's been exciting and challenging to sort of navigate all the different possible pathways for presenting the work. How much do I want to really make the political context front and center in what you see when you walk in the space? And actually, like the third day of hanging the show, I had all these newspaper headlines all over the room, and then got some feedback from people who came in like, whoa, it's a really text-heavy room. And so I wound up taking them all down and putting them in a book that you can access if you want to. So just, it's been fun for me to work in a gallery setting and play with those kinds of questions too.
As a, Juno doesn't have a lot of performance art. I'm going to throw it out there. You know, I mean, this is definitely, I mean, there has been some, you know, like we've done some shows in the little window at the Reach Gallery, and,
right.
You know, things like that. And I've seen Roblin do some crazy cool performance art.
Yeah.
But people don't really know how to respond to performance art, I would have to say. Or even, maybe not even respond, but how to actually interact with it. Have you noticed anything? Are there any tips that you can give people to actually kind of take in the entire room or the entire experience?
Well, that I think that in itself is a good suggestion to go ahead and take it in and to recognize that I think one thing that can often define performance art is that it's not narrative or time based. And so, like I said before, you can come in, you can go out. You will miss some of the pieces that are happening, but you know, performance art, there's this whole world of performance arts that were called happenings, and they just happen and then they disappear, but there's no story, or it's all a story, and you create. I guess one other thing about performance art that is unique to it is that it really puts the onus on the participant or the viewer to make his or her own meaning out of what they see and experience. So, in other words, it's not spoon-fed the way I would say a traditional scripted play tells you what it's about. You have to experience it as you will. So that's all to say, I would invite people to come into the gallery. Please come, first of all.
Yeah.
And then when you come, I hope that you'll view the live performance part of it as one art object in a room of art objects. So there's videos to look at. There's photos to look at. It's a mobile, fluid space. There's two doors, move in and out of them.
Yeah, and it's okay to walk in front of the performer. Like, I felt like a lot of tension in the room for that. I'm like, no, he actually wants you to move around.
Yes.
You know, just because it's a lot to take in. And if you actually don't move, then you've just kind of got one slice of it. Although, if that's your take, hey.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it was hard to... I've performed once only. It was Friday, and so I'm looking forward to this evening.
Cool.
But it was hard for me in the performance space of the room to judge, because I think that people, more than I realized at the time, were, you know, sort of shifting their focus and looking at the other videos in the room and looking at the pictures. And part of it was that it was at times crowded, and so maybe part of it was just not a lot of space to move around. It's a kind of a small gallery. So but I appreciated it actually when you came in and you sort of like just decided to walk right in front of me and look at a picture. And I was like, yeah, that's the idea, that it is meant to be a fluid space. Mm-hmm. And you as a participant, and I like that word too, that you can actively participate in the installation and navigate it how you like. It's sort of a choose your own adventure kind of experience.
Yes, definitely. So can you tell us, tonight you have it, you're in there from 5 to 7, you said?
That's right.
Okay, and then when else are you in too?
I'll be in tomorrow, and this is a slight change in the schedule. Tomorrow it's 4:30 to 6:30.
Okay.
It's half an hour earlier than what's been posted.
Okay.
And then next weekend, Saturday, the 19th of October from 5 to 7, and Sunday the 20th, is my last live appearance, 2 to 4 p.m. And in the meantime, when the gallery is open, when the Jack is open, business hours, the gallery exhibition is open and the videos are running and it's installed, but just without the live element.
That's so cool. And you can check out that schedule at jhc.org, and there's actually also a link here on ktoo.org for that schedule. And
awesome.
I would highly encourage everybody to check out this hour forward. You just haven't seen anything in Juno like it. Yeah. Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you so much, Shauna.
Yeah. And we're going to get a little bit of Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac before we have William Todd Hunt to talk about the symphony.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 10th of October, 2013. It's the birthday of Giuseppe Verdi, born in a village in Parma, Italy, 1813. Parents ran a tavern, but they recognized musical talent in the boy. They bought him a little piano, which he kept for the rest of his life, became organist at his church, went off to a nearby town, boarded with a wealthy grocer who liked him and wanted to support him, and whose daughter Verdi ended up marrying. He wrote an opera, Oberto, which was performed at La Scala, the most important theater in Italy, 1839. He was just 26 years old, and then tragedy struck. His wife died, encephalitis. Verdi had already lost two children in infancy, said he would never write music again. But then someone sent him the powerful libretto for Nabucco, and he could not resist it. He turned it into an opera, which premiered 1842. Audience applauded for 10 minutes after the first scene. Verdi used the same librettist for his next opera, Lombardi, a librettist who tended to put off going to work. Verdi locked him in a room to get him to write on time, once made the mistake of locking him in the room with his wine collection. Verdi wrote a total of 26 operas, including Rigoletto, La Traviata, Aida, and Falstaff. It's the birthday of the playwright Harold Pinter, born East London, 1930. Went to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts in London, didn't like it, left after a couple of years. First full-length play was The Birthday Party, which debuted in the West End, which, like many of Pinter's plays, came to be called comedies of menace, ordinary situations turning ominous or absurd for inexplicable reasons. His big hit was The Homecoming, 1965, about a man who brings his wife home to meet his all-male family, and she stays with the family to be their caretaker and prostitute. Pinter said that after the opening of The Homecoming in New York in 1967, it was one of the greatest theatrical nights of his life. Wealthy audience, women in mink, men in tuxedos. As soon as the curtain opened, they hated the play. The great thing was, Pinter said, the actors went on and hated the audience back even more. It's the birthday of the novelist and short story writer R.K. Narayan, born in Madras, India, 1906, author of Swami and Friends and other books. He was a close friend of Graham Greene, though they met only once briefly in London. They carried on a correspondence for years and years, and it took them around 15 years to go from Dear Mr. Narayan and Dear Graham Greene to Dear Narayan and Dear Graham. Here's a poem for today by Edna St. Vincent Millay, Afternoon on a Hill. I will be the gladdest thing under the sun. I will touch 100 flowers and not pick one. I will look at cliffs and clouds with quiet eyes, watch the wind bow down the grass and the grass rise. And when lights begin to show up from the town, I will mark which must be mine and then start down. Edna St. Vincent Millay's poem, Afternoon on a Hill, from her selected poems, published by Harper Perennial and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. And by Quercus, publisher of Stephen Brumwell's George Washington, Gentleman Warrior, a fresh new account of the secrets behind George Washington's revolutionary success. In bookstores everywhere, Quercus, stories worth reading, books worth recommending. Produced by Joy Biles with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser. It's Thursday, October 10th. And in the studio with me, I have William Todd Hunt here to talk about This Weekend Symphony. Hey, there.
Hey, Shona. How's it going?
Good. We were just talking, and I had you, like, we were on 3 weeks in a row, but I missed you last week.
Oh, yeah, I know. Sadly, I didn't have anything last weekend. But, yeah, I've been seeing a lot of you lately.
Yeah, hi. So, this symphony concert is Russian Romantic.
Yes.
What's so Russian and romantic about
it,
Todd?
Well, gosh. the Russian part is I don't know, I guess pretty easy to describe, since there's two composers on the concert, and they're both Russian. And they both happen to be from the Romantic era of our musical history, which basically is the middle of the 19th century, is what we're talking about here. So Mussorgsky and Tchaikovsky. Tchaikovsky is one that's probably more of the household name, I think, you know, with the Nutcracker and all that good stuff. And Mussorgsky, people know from like Pictures at an Exhibition or Night on Bald Mountain is probably the big thing.
Oh, he did Night on. Okay, cool.
But we're doing four arias from his opera Boris Godunov, which I guess my first exposure to Boris Godunov wasn't actually Boris Godunov, but on the Rocky and Bullwinkle show.
That's what I was going to say.
Boris Godunov.
Yeah.
so he is a play on the Boris Godunov thing.
You know. Is there a Natasha involved or not really?
No, there's not.
Oh,
sadly.
That would have been the love
been
part.
Perfect. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the opera's gone through so many rewrites. I bet if we were to stick Natasha in there, Anyway, so the first half of the concert is actually just the Boris Godunov excerpts with local bass baritone star Dr. David Miller.
Oh, really?
Singing the arias. So we're doing like the coronation scene and then three other arias from that, portraying three different characters: Boris Godunov, Pimyan, an old monk writing a history, and Varlam, a drunk, defrocked monk on a tavern on the road to Lithuania.
Those sound like three characters I would love to play.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Yeah. What else?
Oh, right. And then after the break, Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony, which is, I think, one. If you've never been to the symphony before, and you're kind of scared about, you know, these highfalutin sort of musical ideas and whatnot, this might be one of the perfect of the serious things for you to start off with, because it's very melodic, very accessible, over the top, heart on the sleeve, tug at the heartstrings kind of romantic music, I guess you might call it.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah. So it's a really wonderful piece, and I gotta say that it's one of the gateway pieces. I remember telling you about this, I think,
a
while back.
Yeah, like a gateway
old deja
drug.
Vu, but you know, well, right, exactly, because you brought up the gateway drug thing. So back when, you know, I was in my mid to late teens or so, I was listened to heavy metal pretty much exclusively, and then for some reason decided to order on one of these mail order catalog, you know, record club things, a Tchaikovsky recording of the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto, and I was completely blown away by it. And I was like, wow, I've got to find more of this stuff. So I got the three record set of the late Tchaikovsky symphonies. Just completely, I had no idea, you know, what I was buying, but that it was, I wore them out. It was just a wonderfully mind opening experience, world opening to me. Yeah, and hardly looked back.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And so is Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony, was that written before or after kind of the Nutcracker fame?
Oh, it was after Nutcracker, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's getting towards the end of his life. He died when he was, 52, something like that. So pretty early, relatively speaking. And we're not sure if he, you know, committed suicide, actually, or just accidentally, you know, drunk some water that, you know, gave him cholera. But he was, one of these really emotionally, I don't want to say disturbed, because that sounds, that's too harsh sounding. But he was very sensitive, and he had other things in his life. I mean, he was a homosexual at that time, you know, in the mid to late 1800s. Which, you know, of course, wasn't socially acceptable, and, you know, he had a lot of angst about that, and a lot of ups and downs, and you hear this in his music so much.
That's interesting because I was having a conversation on a rainy street last night just about how tragedy comes or how art comes out of tragedy.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if we were all just completely perfectly happy, there would be no good art, I think. And it's kind of a sad fact, but it's also telling in what art does for us as creators and as consumers of art. It's comforting, it's cathartic, and it really helps make the world make sense when sometimes it doesn't.
Right, and so this Fifth Symphony, you're really feeling like is a great entry point because it is so...
Yeah.
It has so much drama to it.
So much drama. And I mean, it's like it really spoke to the teenage boy in me. So I just think of it as sort of the 19th century version of heavy metal, you know? Kinda. I mean, in some ways. Okay, maybe it's not totally, but it's got that same sort of intensity of emotion and feeling that goes through it. So,
great.
Yeah. In
okay.
that way, I'd say it does.
Yeah. So as far as you have David Miller. Any other guest artists involved?
Yeah. Actually, we do. Come to think of it, it's a short little cameo appearance. But the handbell choirs from both Resurrection Lutheran and Chapel by the Lake are going to be making, like I said, a cameo appearance in the coronation scene of Boris Godunov. Because you can imagine a coronation, you know, all the church bells
and whistles, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And not so many whistles. I did outlaw the whistles. But yeah, other than that, so there's basically two big pieces on the program, each with four parts to it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Great. So this symphony, you are conducting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I am.
So you're the guest
nice
conductor.
Notice,
yeah. And so how is that, in your work with the symphony, you know, how many times have you done
how
that?
How did this come about and all that? Well, I've been acting as the resident conductor and chorus master, for that matter, for the symphony, I want to say, 6-7 years, I don't know, something about like that. And so basically I will prep the orchestra and for before Kyle comes up to conduct, and then sometimes I'll conduct a piece on the program, or if I'm doing the chorus, that's typically what I focus on. But this time, with Kyle got two new jobs, so he has four orchestras this year, and actually is guesting conducting at a fifth one this weekend. And so he just couldn't fit this schedule or this concert into his schedule.
Was Tchaikovsky his gateway drug as well?
I don't think Tchaikovsky was his gateway drug, but actually, it'd be interesting to ask him. So yeah, we'll get on that
next time.
But yeah, so with the schedule of the high school auditoriums and all of that, I'm just trying to make it work, and he tried to make it work for a while, and then he asked me if I was available to do it, and I said sure. And he was thinking about doing Tchaik 5, and I was like, oh my god, I've got to do that. And the other thing on the program was David was going to be singing something, so he had been contracted to do this concert, and we just weren't sure what. And so I came up with the idea of doing the Boris Godunov because it matched, I thought, or countered and matched so well with Tchaikovsky. I mean, Tchaikovsky and Mussorgsky are both almost exact contemporaries. They're like a year apart in age and from the same part of the country in St. Petersburg. But they're kind of coming from completely different angles. Oh, and the music, I think, is perfect for David's voice. It's just right. It's a bass roll that's not very low.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it really seems to fit very well for him.
Great.
Yeah.
Wow. So the information about the concerts can be found...
Oh, on the website is probably the easiest place for you to get to right now, which would be junosymphony.org. There also really should be posters and table tents up all over town, and there's a Facebook event for it and all this kind of stuff, I think. So.
And tickets are available.
Tickets are
hour.
Available, I assume at the local or at the usual local locations like the Jack or the bookstores, online at the various places, of course, at the door. There's also, I don't know the details of it, but there is a pay as you can aspect to it, and I'm not sure when that is and all that, but check the website because I think that'll have all of the details. So if you think, wow, it's not something I really can afford, then Yeah, look into the pay as you can. Because
there's a chance
you might
be able to, yeah. So the show is Saturday.
Saturday night at 8 and Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Both shows, I'm doing a pre-concert talk an hour before. So 7 o'clock on Saturday, 2 o'clock on Sunday for about half an hour. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And what's coming up next for you, Todd?
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's see. I'm doing a conducting work master class, actually, in... Boy, really soon, 3 weeks, something like that. Yeah, and then at the end of November, a chamber orchestra concert. We're doing music of Méhul, a contemporary of Beethoven. Lisa Ebias is going to play a piece by Vaughan Williams. Tyree Peeney's writing a piece for electric cello and chamber orchestra. Yeah.
Busy guy.
Yeah.
Love it. All right. Well, thank you, William Todd Hunt,
talking to
us about the Juno Symphony. That's this Saturday and Sunday, and you can find more information at junosymphony.org. And I did talk to you, Todd, earlier.
Yeah.
Just I really wanted to rename your show
right.
From Russian Romantics to From Russia with Love.
From Russia with Love.
I don't think it. I don't think it's going to happen at this point.
But we can try.
And we'll try now. And that's a little From Russia with Love, a little Bond theme there for you. And in the studio with me is Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up. Hi, Nancy.
Boy, is it busy this week.
It's always busy.
I know. Could we just have one of those quiet weeks?
No.
No. It'd be boring. Okay. So in just a few moments, Ryan Conroe will be doing one of his productions.
Oh,
over
that's right.
At,
yes. He was just here.
Okay.
About
this hour forward.
This hour forward.
Mm-hmm. He does it today and tomorrow, and then he'll do it next week, too. Ernestine Hayes is doing our author talk at 5:30. This celebration of book month or something. I don't remember what. But anyway, she's doing a talk down at the downtown library, which has new elevators. Yahoo!
I know, that's cool. That's cool.
It's a little thing, but it's a big thing. Anyway, that's free, of course. There is the Small Feet, Big Land presentation and book reading with Erin McKittrick. That's over at I think Greg Cheney is the one that did her film A Life on Ice. And
It's
over K. The book signing is sponsored by Hearthside Books. It's at Centennial Hall. There's salsa dancing out at that rec center. Oh, let's see, movie thing is at 7 p.m. at Centennial Hall today. So let's see, Gold Town's got some great stuff going on. The Spectacular Now is, just check their website to get the dates and times. J.L.M. McKinnon's doing the organ concert tomorrow at noon. Again, we have the SAIL annual dinner and auction over at Centennial Hall.
Always a good evening.
Live music by Tramwreck. Woohoo! Tickets are $50. This raises money for a really splendid cause, so you can go online and get the tickets at their website. 7 p.m., we've got the Three Musketeers. I think this is the last weekend for Three Musketeers.
It is, yeah. Thunder Mountain High School.
And they're doing a great job with it, so that's Friday and Saturday, I believe. The evening at Egan sounds very, very interesting. Anatomia Italiano, it's the anatomy of something. I don't know what. But it sounds quite interesting. I just have a little note. We forgot to put it on here, but the information is on our website. So evening at Egan is always a wonderful educational and free event out in the valley. Let's see. There's at the UAS Rec Center, there's an apocalypse party.
That's right. Well, it's zombie apocalypse or humans versus zombies at the university right now.
Yeah.
It's way hardcore.
Okay.
So there's an apocalypse party.
Super. Let's see. At 9:30, a furlough festival featuring Rumblefish at the Alaskan.
And did you just say that the Rumblefish is playing at the Alaskan tomorrow?
I did.
Cool.
Yeah. And they're having a furlough festival.
There you go.
You know, why start at 9:30? It could just start in the morning. I don't know. But anyway, that's really a wonderful thing they're doing. And sit in with the band with Dale McFarlane on drums, Chris Ferry on bass, and Kari Griven on vocals. And Jason Caputo is the host at the Rendezvous on Friday at 9:30. So great evening Friday night. Let's see. Saturday is your last chance to see the shows over at the Alaska State Museum. We've been talking about them since spring, and they are good. Please go there. Let's see, there's a community health fair out at Nugget Mall, an identity pride conference and workshop series at UAS in the morning at 9 o'clock. There is the second Saturday market out at the airport shopping center from 10 until 4. There's the Juno Douglas Little Theaters. They're doing their directing workshop this week at Nugget Mall. In the community room, that's free leading up to their 24-hour miracle, which is coming soon. Yusku'u Dancers is having a spaghetti feed and fundraiser over at the Douglas Methodist Church at 5. 6 p.m., it's National Coming Out Day celebration and film screening, which is free at the UAS Rec Center. And as you mentioned, the symphony is performing at 8 p.m. on Saturday and then again at 3 p.m. on Sunday. We have a celebration for the life of Mike Kirk on Sunday also. Many of you probably had him as teachers or know him from he was a longtime Junoite. Monday's Columbus Day. That doesn't really affect people on this side of the coast very much.
No,
but
it doesn't.
We note it here.
You know what? I didn't even know until you said that. So there you go.
Yeah, there you have it. On Tuesday is the deadline for Poetry Out Loud registration. So if you're a classroom that wants to get involved in the Poetry Out Loud competition, it's for high school students. You need to make sure your teacher is ready to go on
Tuesday.
I
have to give a big shout out for Poetry Out Loud because this is actually an event for, you know, it's for students to do poetry, but it's just a great way for people to connect with words in a really beautiful way. And there's a small performance element, but not too huge. So it's really beautiful.
A lot of people have told me that when they were forced to memorize poetry in their school years, those poems have stayed with them all these many years. And I have to say, if you ask me, you want to go to a poetry reading, it's not my first thing I want to do, maybe, but every single time that I have participated in the Poetry Out Loud thing, it is a moving and powerful experience. So, and kids have an opportunity to win a $20,000 scholarship. So, hey!
Cha-ching!
I know.
No brainer.
Let's get in there, people. There's a, let's see, at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, Auk Bay Community Plan Kickoff Meeting out at the UAS Glacier View Room. There's a formline design class at 6:30 with Ricky Tagaban at the Canvas.
When's that, Monday?
That's on Tuesday, starting
at
6:30.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. The annual meeting for the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council. We are a membership organization. We have an annual meeting. We will be saluting our outgoing board members who are terming out, Janet Schempf and Annie Calkins, and we will be voting in the new members. So please come at 5 o'clock. We need a whole house full in order to have a quorum. So please come and say thank you to these people who've done a lot of work in our community. There's an AARP thing happening over at Centennial Hall on Wednesday also, and I don't have all the details for it. I just remember it's important. It's planning for end-of-life types of things, making sure you have your wills in order, all that sort of stuff. Good planning, even though you're not planning.
On a side note, I saw an AARP magazine at the doctor's office because that's
where they put them.
I wasn't going to say it, but you did. So, but Gloria Estefan was on the cover, and I was like, Gloria Estefan, you're not a retired person.
Well, they retire early these days. Is she? Did you read the article?
No, I didn't. I just sat in the office going, you are not that. No.
Oh, okay, fine.
Anyway.
Okay, there's a community conversation about race at Northern Light Church at 6:30 on Wednesday.
Who is that sponsored by?
That, I'm not sure who that is sponsored by. It's at, like I said, it's at Northern Light Church. So it could be that. Also at 7:30, John Anderson in concert, a swinging 30th anniversary tour at Centennial Hall. That's sponsored by the Fraternal Order, the Troopers, I think it is. That's one of those. Let's see. There's a Learn How This Canadian Mining Project, there's a mining information thing at 6:30 at the Silver Bow, KSM Mine, Learn How This Canadian Mining Project Could Harm Southeast Alaska Fishing and Tourism. It's good to be well-informed on these sorts of things. Thursday is our last, or not our last, but the next Any Given Child meeting, and we'll probably have a lot of big news coming out of that one. It's also from 3 to 4:30, Lights On after-school programs next Thursday, a whole in the afternoon, both at Thundermount or Floyd Dryden and DZ. A lot of information about programs in the after-school. It's really exciting what's going on in that area, and I like to let you know about that so you have time to plan. And at 6 o'clock on Thursday, it's Alien Ant Farm Live at Centennial Hall. What's that all about?
It's big news, actually. they're okay. a pretty big deal.
The Vikings bringing them in, and I think UIS Rec Center. Also, there's a Celebrate Suzuki Community Concert at the Jack at 6:30. We just got some new Suzuki instructors in town. So things are growing in the arts community here. It's very exciting. I just ran a report for no good reason the other day, just to see what it was in terms of a whole year's worth of work. A little over $800,000 worth of tickets have been sold in this town just through our system. I think that the arts community is showing what it can do in terms of making this a wonderful place to live and bringing people to town. So,
you know, what's fascinating is that I try to get to a lot of arts events, and I do a fair amount of producing them as well, and I just can't even get to all the ones that I want to see. And that's an amazing problem to have in a town of 30,000 people, don't you think?
It is. It is. And I think people should be really pleased with all the work that they themselves are doing. I mean, this is the work of all the community members are putting all these things together. It's very exciting that we're all so busy. Artistic and creative. Yay.
And there's always a way to get involved, too. And if you want to get more information about this fine, fine calendar, where can you get anything?
Both on the KTOO.org website and the JAHC.org website. And if you want to put something on the calendar, send us an email and we'll make sure it gets on there.
Great. Ms. Nancy DeCherney of the Jack, thank you so much. It is absolutely always a pleasure. And thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon today. My name is Shona Strasser. It's Thursday, October 10th. It has been quite a pleasure. This is KTOO Juneau. We rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269A0 in Lemon and Switzer Creek, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS an excursion inlet and icy strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
The next TED viewing event at your public library is Thursday, October 24th. Our theme is magic. Professor and mathemagician Arthur Benjamin demonstrates fascinating stunts involving math that make it seem like magic. Daredevil street magician David Blaine shows how he pushes the limits of human endurance. And illusionist Beau Lotto explores the brain's visual system through optical illusions. View and discuss these TED Talks October 24th at 6, with refreshments provided by the Friends of the Juneau Public Library.
We've agreed to have our teams work together to see if we can come together and move forward.
Republicans in the White House discuss ways to end the fiscal standoff. It's Thursday, October 10th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.